The 2026 Decoding Aggression and Reactivity Summit, created by my friend Ness Jones, launches April the 19th and 20th. She's brought together more than 10 professionals from around the world, myself included, to help you understand what's really going on underneath aggression and reactivity, and how to support your dog in a way that actually creates change. You'll get access to over 12 hours of education, real-world application, and conversations that go far beyond surface-level training advice. Plus, you receive a workbook and a gift from each of the speakers. For $47, you can't find that anywhere. Check the link in the show notes or go to dogspeak101.com to our event page to find our special link. Hey, Dog Speak Geeks. I am excited today. I have Ness Jones, who is a certified separation anxiety pro behavior consultant on the other end of the world. It is evening time here in Tennessee, and it is 9 a.m. And you're in Australia? Okay, because I get New Zealand and Australia. I kind of all there.
I am actually in New Zealand. I was born there, but yeah, I live in Australia.
I knew it was there somewhere. I am so happy that you have joined. Could you tell everybody, you have a host of titles and things that you do. So I think it's best you just tell everybody about you.
Oh, okay. It's pretty boring, really. I've got a few.
Never boring.
I've got a few. I can't even remember what I've got in terms of my qualifications, but ethology, I've got a diploma in dog stuff. So, yeah. And, of course, my separation anxiety training is where I focus all my energies, because that's where I specialize, separation anxiety or separation-related behaviors. Yeah. So
I love that, because it is such a little niche that, we were talking right before we got on here that I don't do a lot of separation anxiety cases. And I think that the majority of people that call me say they have separation anxiety, and it's really not. So when you talk about separation anxiety, look how you like how we just jumped right in there. My listeners are probably like, wow, there was not even any chatter there. We're just jumping right in. It's dinner time on one end and breakfast side on the other. So we're jumping. When you get someone that calls and says, you know what, hey, I think my dog has separation anxiety, what are you looking at? What kind of clues do you look for to say, yeah, you really do have an issue here?
Wow, that is a great, I don't think anyone's ever asked me that. That's a brilliant.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, thanks.
I mean, obviously I do all that stuff, but I don't think anyone specifically said, what are you looking at or for, anyway. So, first thing I always say is, have you had a vet check? Because sometimes it's related to health. So allergies, gastro, pain, arthritis, anything like that, it's important to rule out pain or health issues, because it can impact the dog's ability to be by themselves. So that's number one. And when we say separation anxiety, we should make it really clear that we're talking about separation-related behaviors or separation-related to stress. So it's not always based in anxiety. It could be frustration or FOMO, fear of missing out. So it could be related to age. A young teenage dog might be displaying signs of separation, what we would traditionally say separation anxiety, but it could actually be that they're not, they've just got lots of energy, they're bored, they don't know what to do with that energy, they're sticking in things that they shouldn't be doing, like destroying the couch or digging holes in the backyard or whatever that is for that dog. So does that dog have anxiety? Probably not. It's probably more a case of, they need to get out and get some more exercise, they need some more enrichment, they need more things going on in their lives, so that they don't destroy the couch. So there's that. Then there's the puppies. Puppies want to be with their, secure attachment person. They're it's like having a baby. You wouldn't leave a baby by itself. What's going to happen? The baby's probably going to get distressed, or, a toddler, what have you. So we have to consider the age of the dog as well. And also senior dogs, they get cognitive decline. They get, you know, they might go lose their sight, be losing their sight, be losing their hearing. And that, you know, if you think about a sick child, what they want their mum, don't they?
Oh, absolutely.
So age, health, you know, what are the things? So there's a whole gamut of things that we can look at and say, does that dog actually have separation anxiety? The other thing is we've just gone through, 2 years of COVID lockdowns. Well, you know, mm-hmm. those dogs are older now, but many of them never learnt to be by themselves. So it wasn't that they were anxious necessarily, or they may not have been anxious in if life was normal, but then they go through COVID lockdowns for 2 years, you know, and I don't know about what happened in America. I'm pretty sure it's probably the same as what happened here was you could not get a dog for love nor money. Everybody was like, well, I don't have to go to work. It's time to get a dog. So
absolutely,
dogs came into, you know, you couldn't get one in shelters, your breeders had none, you know, you just couldn't get a dog. So these dogs all came into our homes and then they got to spend 2 years with us where they really weren't left by themselves. And so then everybody, life went back to normal. And what happened is they were just like, well, this isn't, where are you going? I can't cope with this. So do these dogs have a proper anxious behavior, or is it just that they never learned to be by themselves? So then we have to teach them to be by themselves in a nice, kind, gentle manner, compassionate, yeah. Ethical. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. When these dogs, let me say that. I think one of the things that I have seen across the board when people have dogs that tend to show inappropriate behavior when left alone, that a lot of people don't feel like it's something that they can truly deal with and handle because, you know, unfortunately they hear horror stories from other pet owners and, you know, and a lot of them tend to kind of give up, right, with these dogs because they don't really have that patience that is needed for that. I would imagine that a lot of the people that come to you are probably at that point of saying, look, I'm willing to do absolutely anything at this point to help with this. Do you find that most people grab on and really follow those things that you're asking for?
Wow.
Because really, people are lazy.
Yeah. Look, the thing, the kind of sidebar to your question is what advice have they already been given from, let's say, well-meaning friends and family. And, you know, I would say 99% of my clients have been given some advice and they're still with me because it didn't work. So things like let them bark it out. They're just a dog. They're just a puppy. They'll get over it. They'll be fine. Just, you know, you're mollycoddling it. You're spoiling it. You know, you're being too much and, you know, your dog wouldn't be like that if you weren't spoiling it and, you know, just let them bark it out. They'll be all right. And, of course, all my clients have said, oh, yeah, we tried that.
Yep.
It didn't work. That's why they're with me. Yeah. So, right. So there's those sort of bites. And, of course, then they get onto the internet because what is the first thing we all do? It's very natural. I've done it myself. When you've got an issue, how do I resolve blah, 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 blah. And unfortunately, there is a lot of outdated advice on the internet and even dog trainers give some terrible, terrible advice. I can tell you a story if you want to hear it. It's quite shocking.
Might as well.
anyone that's followed me in the part would has probably heard the story, but I'll tell it again because it's shocking. So when I first started specializing in separation anxiety, which was actually, by the way, just after the COVID lockdown. So that's kind of when I really realized there was a need for this. And I truly believe there is a huge need for specialists in this area. A lady reached out to me. She had this gorgeous Labradoodle called Billy. And Billy was had the best life ever, like the most amazing life. Went to the beach, went to the park, had doggy play dates, was raw fed, lived in the house. Just, you know, she did a bit of a enrichment with him, a bit of obedience with him, went for two walks a day. You know, like, just if you were a dog, you would want to live with this woman.
It sounds like it.
The only bad thing was that every time she walked out the door and left him, he would panic, and she would come back, and she said it was like he was drenched. He drooled so much. It was like he'd gone for a swim. He was that bad. And she tried all the things that people try. So the calming chews, the thunder jackets, the medication from the vets, blah, blah, blah. You know, everything that people try, she tried it, pheromones, whatnot. And she couldn't get to resolve it. And so then she decided to reach out to a trainer in her area. And he said, yes, I'll fix your separation anxiety. Don't worry about it.
I'm already panicking.
This is what we're going to do. No more walks. No more beach. Oh. No more doggy play dates. No more raw feeding. No more obedience training. No more enrichment. He's going to be not in the house anymore. We're going to buy a crate or a pen, and he's going to be put outside. You are not to interact with that dog. He's just going to stay in that pen or crate. And you're not to feed him either. We're going to get a bowl of kibble. He was a raw-fed dog. We're going to get a bowl of kibble, and we're going to put it on the outside of that crate. And you're not to feed him until I tell you to. So we want him to smell it, but he's not to access it. That was his
advice. If my listeners could see me, my mouth is just like open, like it's catching flies right now.
Yeah, it's shocking. It's a true story. Like, she was telling me this, and I was exactly like you. Are you for real? This guy's a dog trainer? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And so she actually went and bought the crate. She was going to follow his advice. And then luckily she reached out to, she's on Facebook in our Labradoodle group. And she's like, look, this is what I've been told to do. I'm not comfortable with it. But, you know, this is supposed to resolve this problem for me. And somebody suggested me. So then we started working together. So, oh, thank goodness for Billy.
Thank goodness.
Poor Billy.
I'm like, poor Billy.
No. But can you imagine the damage that would have done to their relationship, for starters? It would have made, apart from that, like the damage to their relationship, how much worse it would have made his anxiety about being alone. It would have made it 10 times worse.
Oh, I can imagine the fallout behavior that would happen with that dog, and probably the illnesses that it would end up having, and just the stress. And listeners, listen, if somebody tells you something that you're not comfortable with, don't do it. Yeah. Don't do it. And you know, we're not all equal. Like, all trainers, all behavior consultants, all behavior specialists, we're not all equal. We all have our kind of our specialty here. Separation anxiety is not mine, you know, and I will deal with some mild cases, but I think the cases that you get are a little bit more.
Yeah. So it's a good point, though. I always say to people, advocate for your dog, whether it's at the vets, the groomers, a trainer. If you're uncomfortable with the advice, or your dog doesn't seem to be thriving in that situation, get the hell out of Dodge, because it's
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, because got to consider the welfare of the dog. I mean, it's so important, and I imagine when we do talk about, you know, working with dogs on a regular basis, we always talk about the welfare of the dog, and we talk about the welfare of the owner too. But when you're looking at just some general behavior, yeah, we really focus a little bit more on the welfare of the dog. I would imagine with separation anxiety that you deal with, you really have to consider in a pretty equal amount that welfare of that human and their household versus, you know, and the welfare of the dog.
Oh, sorry. Did you hear my dog bark? Oops.
Oh, we hear them. Hey, guys, you're on a dog podcast and you heard dogs bark. Hey, look, Myers heard them in the living room. He's having, you know what? We'll just deal with it. Okay, go ahead.
So the welfare of the owner, yes. The guardian is important, because it is really stressful having a dog with, you know, this issue. There's so many emotional things they go through. So if they're leaving their dog, guilt, because they're worried about their dog's going to panic, or, you know, what their dog is going through, if it's upset, feeling anxious, et cetera, et cetera. there's an emotional toll on relationships. So if they're in a partnership, one of the partners may not be in agreement with the way it should be resolved. So that could be, you know, it's just a dog, like, get rid of it. Or it could be, you sort it out, I don't want anything to do with this, you, it's your problem. So it can take an emotional toll on your relationships. And also with family and friends, I had a lady literally in floods of tears because she had a dog, she couldn't find cover for it while she, you know, did things, and her family would have get-togethers and she would say, well, I can't come unless I can bring my dog because I can't find anyone to look after it. And they were saying, well, you can't bring the dog. So she'd say, well, I can't come. And then they would say, well, you love the dog more than you love us.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Yeah. And she was just trying to do the right thing. That's all.
Yeah.
And she was literally crying. And then there's the emotional. So the financial toll can be dramatic. Oh, and relationships with neighbors as well. Because if you've ever lived next door to a dog that barks constantly, it's very unpleasant, so you can understand that they may get a bit fed up and they may not act in the, you know, a very polite way, let's say.
yes, to say this is when you make them cornbread.
Yeah, right, cornbread, yeah.
You take them some cornbread or, okay, some, it's chocolate chip cookies. Does that work?
So that can be a problem, financial, because, you know, maybe the neighbours have complained to council. I don't know how it works over there, but if you get a council complaint, they'll come and investigate it, and, you know, they may fine you. If your dog is destroying itself, so in terms of, I've heard of dogs, I haven't had a client that this has happened to, but I've heard of at least three dogs have jumped out of two-story windows.
Yeah, that's bad. That's so scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's other ones. So one of the, just kind of circling back to some poor advice that people are given with locking them in a crate. And I've heard of people coming home and there's blood everywhere because the dog has tried to get out of the crate or gotten out of the crate. I've actually heard a funny story of dogs being put in crates. And when the owner gets home, they're outside of the crate and the crate's still shut.
You're like, I don't. And that's where those cameras come in.
Yeah.
Handy that we're going to get to in a second. Yeah.
So it can be a vet bill as well, cost money financially. And the other thing is if they are having to go somewhere and the dog's not trained to be, they haven't undertaken any training, they may find cover for the dog, which could involve doggy daycare or pets or something like that, again, financial cost. So irrespective of that, when they're doing training with me, I find that, their mental, emotional state is important to, you know, A, give them the support that they need and say, you know, give them the confidence they need, make sure they're not feeling stressed when they're doing the training because they can get tense, which is obviously going to feed into the dog.
Yeah.
Just being calm when they're doing the training and just know that there's somebody there that's got their back, because if everybody else in their life is saying, it's just a dog, leave it, it'll get over it, and it's not, clearly not, at least they've got someone there that's got their back. But I've got to the point, like sometimes if I'm watching a video of somebody's dog, and on the last step of the training, the dog is kind of reacting to them, and I can see that they've got tense all of a sudden because they're obviously so invested in the training, and who can blame them? They want to resolve this problem. That suddenly they've gone from, oh, I'm just doing these, I'm nice and calm, to I've got to get this.
Yes.
And then the dog, of course, reacts. So I've actually encouraged them to do some deep breathing or do a yoga, standing forward fold, something like that. So just to kind of center themselves, get their head straight, and, you know, make sure that they try to create a successful training session.
Yeah, I think that when you're looking at the two organisms like that, you really do have to consider both aspects of it because, you know, it's definitely all going to affect each other. You know, I mean, the dog's affecting the human. Why wouldn't the human affect the dog?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, whew. When You know, and here's, I'm just thinking of some questions that I know that I over here in the States that we would have, because you guys are probably a lot more holistic than we are around here. Everybody's always about getting medication and, you know, let's get that trazodone and that gabapentin and let's just, you know, maybe some fluoxetine. How often do you find that support in a pharmaceutical way is needed with many of these cases?
So I'm not a trainer that says, and unfortunately there are trainers out there, I'm sure you've run into some yourself, where they will not accept a client unless the dog is on medication. And I do not agree with that at all, at all, at all, at all.
Yeah, I don't either.
Especially, you know, for a dog, especially with the whole COVID lockdowns is a really good example. Those dogs never learn to be by themselves. It doesn't mean they need to be medicated. Because are they anxious or is it just more of a training setting that we need to figure out? So I never say you must put your dog on medication. The only time I might encourage that vet discussion, and of course I always say I'm not a vet, you need to talk to this with your vet, is if the dog's got generalized anxiety. So if they're stepping out into the big wide world and everything's scary and worrying and terrifying, then I might say, hey, let's have that conversation with your vet. And just, you know, because if a dog's living in fight flight 24 hours a day, I mean, what a horrible way to live. So I might say, yeah, let's talk to the vet. But in general, if for a client that's not on medication, I would, if it got to a point where it wasn't moving forward, then I might say, maybe we need some extra support. And I really want to make it clear there's no magic pills. Medication plays a supporting role in the training, but that's all. And, you know, if you have to put your dog on medication, I would like to think it's not going to be forever, that it's a temporary thing that, you know, you use it to support the dog to get it through this thing and then phase it out with after conversations with the vet. What I do find is a lot of people will say, I tried medication, didn't work. And I'm like, yeah, but did you do it hand in hand with training? And did you go back to your vet and say, because I think a lot of people try it and then go, didn't work, and they don't have a conversation with their vet. And if you don't have that conversation with your vet, they might have a solution for you. It could be an increased dose. It could be adding something else in. It could be swapping out that medication for something else. So there's a lot of options that the vets can offer. I will say that go to a vet that understands medications. They all have their own interests. Some of them it's diet, some of them it's skins, you know, allergies. Find a vet that understands medications. A lot of vets will say, look, this is beyond me. It's not my field of interest. There are vet behaviorists, of course, but they cost a small arm and a leg.
Puppy. Exactly.
So talk is just be open-minded, I think, is a really good message to people. And, you know, a lot of people's pushback saying, oh, I don't want medication, I don't want my dog to be a zombie. You know, I think a lot of people don't realize that dogs sleep, you know, can sleep, obviously age-dependent and a whole bunch of other things, but can sleep up to 17 hours a day, which is a heck of a long time. And if your dog is literally bouncing off the walls constantly and then suddenly you put them on medication and you see a dog that's sleeping, they're not maybe zombies. They're actually might possibly be getting that amount of sleep that they actually need.
Exactly. Yeah. A little normal.
I don't think all dogs need to be on medication. I think that's really, really poor way of looking at it.
I agree. I think that we do look at it as kind of a quick fix. It's like, well, here, let's just, you know, it's the amount of clients that I have that come to me, they're like, yeah, we're on trazodone, but you haven't done anything else. You just don't trazodone. And it's one of those that I always tell people, look, let's just, if the dog is okay, let's clear them off of some, all these meds, let's start. And then we'll add in as we need to support. Yeah. And I would imagine that dogs that have anxiety or injure themselves when being left, okay, they may need support a little sooner. Yeah. But I I'm with you. I don't think it's a blanket need across the board. And I think a lot of people do feel that way when they deal with a dog that can't be left home alone.
Yeah.
Where they feel like I got to have something and I don't want them to be drugged out. And, you know, and financially, it's expensive over here to send dogs to daycare.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when I first opened one in early 2000s, I charged like $18 a day. And now it's like $45 a day.
Wow.
I'm like, I got out of it a little too early, I guess. I mean, I'd be a millionaire by now. I mean, it's ridiculous.
One thing I would like to mention before you move on is, so I'm actually, one of the things you said, what kind of qualifications do you have? I do actually have a diploma in small animal naturopathy. So while I'm not, I don't practice, but I do take a holistic approach when dealing with separation-related behaviours. And so there are other options. There's CBD, which works on the endocannabinoid system. There's Cabiba. There's Skullcap, Valerium. You know, even something for a mild case, chamomile tea, believe it or not, is calming. So you could brew up a tea and put, you know, maybe drop, I don't know, you can maybe, you know, just have a tea. Obviously, you would want to make nice and cool, but somehow administer into the dog's food or maybe a little bit in the water or something like that. So there's a lot of options. And I would just say that if you're going to go down the natural route, you still need to do it hand in hand with training. And there's a lot of clever marketing out there. So finding the right the right product that is – oh, and one other thing is yeah, so what I'm saying is don't believe the BS on the market.
Correct. Correct.
But also, every dog is an individual, same as us. We're all individuals. So if you went to a doctor with a heart problem, your doctor might give you a medication and then it might be the wrong one for you, whether it's natural or prescribed for the dog. So then we say, well, if that's not the right one for you, maybe we should try this one for you. So if somebody has tried some sort of natural remedy for their dog or prescribed medication for their dog, if it didn't work, maybe there's something else that will.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up. I love the holistic route. Love, you know, we got our little guy off of Clomacom and he's on ashwagandha, right. Valerian root. He's on L-theanine, you know, and he has this really nice combination of natural things that he's doing so much better on. And when you guys are using holistic, listeners, it takes time. Yeah. Be patient. And sometimes, you know, I get a lot of times people say, well, I used L-theanine and it's not working. Well, how do you know it's not, right? It could be improving things. You're just not noticing. That's one thing, but also adding in something else could be. So, yeah, the holistic way is really such a good way to go with support because a lot of things are very easy to get. Like you said, easy to administer in a dropper. My wife loves hunting for mushrooms, and when she finds mushrooms, she brings them home, and they're dried out. We look like witches around here. We have a whole counter of it. She makes her tinctures. She's taking her turkey tail. I mean,
as long as she knows what mushrooms, because we just had a case.
Yes.
We just had a court case in Australia here, where this woman served mushrooms to a dinner party, and they all died.
No.
Yeah. And she's been charged with murder. I actually, it literally finished yesterday, I think, or it may still be going through the court systems. I'm not sure. I don't want to talk too much about it because
I have got to look that up. That is amazing. Yes. No, she does a lot of good study. She's a nerd. And so she's really on it because I've asked her, I'm like, are you sure we can eat this? I just need to make sure that, you know, how much life insurance do you have on me?
Oh, that's hilarious.
When you are, when you have, and we call separation anxiety, do you have a blanket statement? I mean, or a blanket kind of title of what you look at with separation anxiety? You were talking about, you know, if it's frustration based, right? And that frustration can maybe turn into maybe a little anxiety. Are you treating it all pretty much on the same kind of platform?
Yeah, I do. The training looks the same. It's just that with a frustrated dog, or, you know, a dog that's maybe just literally not getting its needs met, not getting enough enrichment, or, you know, outings, what have you, or a teenage dog. Yeah, the training looks the same, but we hope that it goes quicker, as opposed to a dog okay. that's like completely having a panic attack. Yeah, when you walk out the door.
You know, this is going to be a big question people are asking.
How long?
On average.
I don't know. It depends. It's such a frustrating answer, isn't it? It depends.
It really, and I get it because I give that answer all the time. I think I gave that answer 7 times today. So,
look, I've had some weird Kate clients where they've just gone flown through. I had a 10-year-old dog, and you know, just to give you some background, it lived with this woman for 10 years and it was panicking for 10 years. So it was instilled. She sent it up to a man because she was friends with she sent it up to a friend of hers who started doing the training. The dog was put on fluoxetine at the time, but there's no way it could have, well, unless it was an outlier, but it worked. It either worked really quickly or it was the training that helps that dog. But in 8 weeks, that dog got up to 5 hours.
Wow. Yeah,
which is ridiculous. I mean, that's a lot. That's really, really super quick.
I mean, 10 years. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Other dogs, yep, 8 weeks is all they need. They just need to learn. They just need to learn. But for some dogs, it takes a lot longer, and it can really be based on the person as well. You know, what's their day look like? How busy are they? I had one client who, I'm sure the dog could have done it. However, she's a very, very busy lady, so really long hours. When she wasn't working, she was often on trips, like work trips. And outside of that, she had her son and daughter come and stay with her, and she never really got the opportunity to train. And because of the nature of her work, when she got home, she was exhausted. You know, she just didn't have the capacity. But she does have, a great dog sitter that was always looking after the dog. So she had options. So she just went, I just can't. I haven't got the brain power to do this. I haven't got the capacity to do it because of her situation. So it's always going to vary on the person, on what's happening outside of, you know, what's happening in the home as well. So there can be a lot of things that can affect how the dog goes. Like, as I said, we've mentioned health. But if there's, like, friction in the home, if the dog's in a stressful environment and they're, you know, a bit unsure, or if a new person's come into the home, or if somebody's left the home. I've had a couple of clients where there's been a divorce and the dog's stayed with one of the people and isn't coping at all, just big emotional turmoils, things like that. Moving home can make a difference, can impact the dog. So somebody passing, and it could be a animal companion passing as well. It doesn't have to be a human companion. So,
well, on average, do you find that more kind of adult age dogs are suffering, or do you find that it's kind of coming on in this kind of teenage, little past adolescence, young adult? Because we know cognitively, older dogs, senior dogs can easily kind of become anxious at any change in the environment because so many changes are happening in their body and in their system. But what kind of age do you typically see?
Probably, that's a good question, actually. I've never actually sort of delved into the age of my dogs. It really has varied. Some of them are, 50, you know, the old ones can be 15 years. Some of them are people that are, well, the dog probably doesn't have anxiety, but they're proactive. And I love the ones that are proactive, like, let's get it right from, you know, puppy. I don't want the puppy to get it. So let's start the training straight away. And it's a really, really quick process. So that goes back into that. teenage dogs, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my dog Freya, and look, this is before I was a dog trainer. I worked in an office. She was my second dog as an adult. So we had one dog, Inca, and then we got Maya. And he was fine to be by himself. When she hit her teens, holes in the plasterboard, powder everywhere, all over her swing.
Wow.
Powder. Yeah, it was bad. I don't even know if the term separation anxiety was, you know, like I wasn't a trainer anyway, so I didn't even know what was going on. Just like she didn't like to be by herself. So, but was she getting her needs met? Probably not. I probably wasn't walking her enough. I wasn't giving her enough enrichment. She was a teenager. She had lots of energy. She didn't know what to do with it. So, yeah, we got through that.
Yes. I tell you, it's hard. Being a teenager is hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a long time since I've been one, at least physically. Mentally, I pretty much act like one sometimes. You know, but we all need to.
Yeah.
I saw that you had this really cool, like, I love when people take, and I can't ever think of the name of it, the acronyms. Yes. You have an ALONE acronym.
Yes. Yes.
Tell us about
it. ALONE method. Yeah.
The ALONE method.
So it's A for ALONE. Obviously, A is assessing the dog's threshold. So to do this type of training, we need to know where the panic line is. So just I know you understand what a threshold is, but for your listeners, I just call it the panic line. So it's the line in the sand where the dog starts to panic. And there'll be a lot of behaviors underneath that line that might show us the dog's getting more and more concerned and worried about it. So, but to do this training, we try to keep what we endeavor to keep the dog under the threshold, under the panic line, because we know that every time the dog is faced with its fears, let's say it gets anxious for being by itself, it's over threshold. It just makes it worse and worse and worse. It doesn't get better. And that's why the let them bark it out method does not work, because they're constantly, if they're anxious about being by themselves and it keeps happening over and over and over again, it doesn't resolve, you know. And that's why I end up with clients, because if it works, all the people
give right.
advice and tried it and it didn't work. So, yeah. So A stands for assessing what the threshold is. And then so if we know where that line is, where the panic line is, we can make sure that we do all the training underneath that line and make sure the dog feels safe and confident when we walk out the door. L stands for learning to feel confident. So learning to feel good about being by themselves, which is all the training that we do. A-L-O.
N-O.
O is... observing the dog, that's kind of a twofold thing. So observing with the camera. So we're watching the dog on the camera, preferably on a live feed. We don't want to watch a recording, because if your dog panics when you're out, you've got no idea, because you're coming back and finding out later. So your dog's going to be over threshold, so you're undermining your own training. But also observing means understanding your dog's specific body language. So we know what, you know, finding out what dogs do when they feel anxious, but then knowing specifically what your dog does. So, you know, it could be, what are the subtle signs that show that your dog is starting to get to the point where they might be going towards that threshold? And it might start with a lip lick, but then we have to look at the context. So is the dog just had, you know, they just had woken up and they've got a dry mouth, so lick their lips. Same with the shake off. Most dogs, when they get up, do a shake off, like they're, you know, coming out of some water, shaking off in water. So did they just wake up and that's just a normal behavior? Or is it like, oh, I'm a bit stressed and I'm trying to shake off some stress? So looking at your dog specifically, what it does when they're playful, calm, relaxed, sleepy, just chilling out, and then understanding what they do when they aren't. And that it could very well be a pattern. I've had a few dogs where there's a very clear pattern that leads to the over threshold moment. And sorry, can you hear my dog? He's roaring on himself. So observing, so understanding your dog's body language and observing on a live camera feed. and nurturing calm home alone time by setting the dog up for success. So setting the dog up for success means they don't need to toilet. They've done their business. They have had their exercise and their play and their enrichment, etc. So they're in a ready to rest and relax sort of state of mind. They've had their food, so they're not hungry. They're not, you know, because we get a little bit restless when we're hungry. Moving on to your dinner time now. So
that's right.
What else? So they're not expecting somebody to come home from work, and you know they become a little bit more vigilant and like, oh, what's happening? Or they're not expecting playtime, so it's not traditional. You wouldn't do the training traditionally when it's playtime. Or Zoomy time, we know witching hour the dogs get released, yes. 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening. They're like,
yes,
which is great. I love watching it, but not a great time to train. So the end part is just finding out what is the ideal time to train, especially at the beginning, because we're building foundations, and when we're building foundations, we want to set the dog up for success. So it's really, really important. I don't add complications until the dog's at a solid, consistent 30 minutes. And then the complication might be change of day, change of time, or the dog's in a more active mindset, or, you know, two people training or whatever it is, but for that situation. So, and E, what is E? Now I'm E is... oh my God, I've got a mental break.
Step by step guidance. Oh, easy.
Easy. Thank you.
I think I wrote it down because I have to write it down because I forget things.
Yeah, easy step by step guidance. So basically, just training the dog is because unfortunately we know this isn't going to resolve itself. It doesn't.
Right.
It just doesn't.
They don't grow out of it. There's no, yeah.
Yeah. So But the training I do is very structured, and it is step by step. So we're not throwing everything at the wall going, let's see what works. It's a lot at the beginning, there is a lot of data gathering. So we are going, well, what happens if we, you know, change the dog from being outside to inside? And I've had a few clients where I've done that, and it's been really successful. So kind of changing the parameters in the chain, or using a different exit point or whatever it is. But it's still very structured. And so while we're gathering data, then we still keep it structured. And what happens if? So, yeah. Does that make sense?
I think that's the one thing that people don't realize that is so good and important is if you can keep a little journal.
Oh, yeah.
On just your dog's normal kind of day activity, I mean, it can really help you remember the things that you need to remember to know if something's going wrong.
Yes.
Because you ask questions to clients and you're like, well, you know, how do they do when you do XYZ? And like, well, I don't know. I've never really. Okay, well, start writing that down, right? Or my favorite's like, well, what do you tell them when you do this? Well, I don't know exactly what I tell them. I'm like, okay, so let's start here.
Yeah.
Gathering that data is huge. Yeah. And I can imagine that, you know, and thank goodness that now cameras are cheaper for people. And, you know, whenever I took Willow on her first little trip, we took our little camera so that we could watch her because she had not been in a crate anywhere else but my home. And even though her sister was with her, free to roam, you know, we took the camera because I'm like, I don't know how she's going to do. And we were going to a softball game. We didn't even get out of the driveway. And I stayed home we stayed at the B&B that night because she just couldn't handle it. And I thought, you know what, I'll just watch the game from the TV. But then after that, she was able to cope. But having that camera really helped us. We were 20 minutes away. We kept checking in to see if there's any time we need to leave. Because I don't want to create that anxiety especially in a new environment like that. If you had to give someone three little bitty pieces of advice on how to avoid having any type of issue with separation anxiety, what would it be?
Before I answer that, can I just go back a couple of things because you jogged my memory. So in terms of when we were talking about medicine, whether it's natural or prescribed, and we see people that say, oh, it didn't work. I think we don't notice changes unless we keep that diary ourselves. So it's like seeing somebody you haven't seen for ages and they've lost loads of weight. And you're like, wow. Yeah. If you see them every day, maybe you live with them, you maybe don't notice as much. And I think keeping that diary, what you were saying, is really, really important. So I just wanted to touch on that. The other thing is cameras. You don't even have to buy a camera. So Zoom calls are free for the first 40 minutes.
That's what I used also. We used the Zoom on my computer.
Yeah. And you just tap into it on your phone and you watch it. The only thing I would say, if you're doing that, make sure your phone your microphone is off, because otherwise your dog can probably hear you. Zoom, Skype, Microsoft Teams, Google's got, I forget what theirs is called, and you can even use Facebook. So you can do a Facebook Live. And just make sure you don't make it public. You set it for only me, and then you can watch it on your phone.
I love that.
Yeah, it doesn't have to cost money. So
I love it.
So now what was your question? Three little itty-bitty things to...
avoid.
Okay, yeah. So let's talk about puppies. Oh, it could be a rescue, but let's just talk about puppies. So,
okay.
Because, you know, if we get the puppy off in the right... path, yes. Then we can, you know, simple. So I don't like forcing independence. So I know there's some trainers that will say, oh, well, their dog has to be by themselves. I don't worry about that. So a dog learns independence naturally, I think, as they get older and they get more confident. So if we look at secure attachment figure theory, babies or puppies, they want you to be their secure base, and if they feel like you're emotionally supportive and you're there for them and they feel safe with you, they're more likely to go and explore and be confident in the home, if that makes sense. So I don't force independence. I'm not saying that they shouldn't learn how to be by themselves. Obviously we need to do that, but I would do it in a way whereas maybe they get a con or they get something to, you know, they've had all their fun, now it's their downtime, and they're put away, but, you know, where they're comfortable, they're not freaking out. Because what can happen is if we say, right, you're going to be shut in that room there or shut outside, and they know you're there, then they can get super clingy. So you're actually having the reverse effect. So just being mindful of how we create that is, and doing it in a really empathetic, compassionate way, is going to set that puppy up for success. Then I would probably do some door desensitization. So basically whatever your exit point is, this, you know, if it's the same door you leave by to go and take the dog out for, you know, fun stuff, they're probably going to be very invested in what you do when, you know, you're going out to the door and back or what have you. So we kind of want to put a dampener on that and say there's nothing exciting about the door. So there's different ways of doing it. It would probably depend on the setup, but you could put a visual cue out. So this means you're coming, and that could involve you're coming with me, you've got your harness on or your collar on or whatever. Or it could be some sort of visual cue. You're not coming. This bowl of flowers is going to sit on the bench, and we're not coming. Or a big red ribbon or whatever it is. But, you know, so you could use a visual cue. You could also use your voice. Like I'll be trying to get a male client to say, oh, I'll be back. Like, well, good. I also encourage them. Back. Yeah, go on.
Who needs to do it? Come on.
I know. But I had one lady say, because I try to get them to say something that makes them feel good when they're leaving as well, because they're laughing about it. Yeah, they're feeling light and happy, so the dog won't be feeding off any anxiety. I had one lady say, cheerio, old chap.
Oh, my God, that's fantastic.
Cheerio, old chap. But, you know,
now I'm going to have to come up with something.
Yeah.
Now I'm just like, bye, baby, I love you. Mama, be home later. I'm going to miss you. I love you.
I just say,
make me feel good.
I'm going now, be good. Not really boring. But So then I would start with getting the dog having no value in the exit point. I have a very structured way of doing that. It's not standing at the door opening and shutting it. It's kind of backwards and forwards and, you know, very structured steps. I would not leave the dog alone until it's ready to be alone. So outside of training. So if the dog's not ready, it's going to go over threshold and that's going to undermine the training. So and then just from the door desensitization, step outside the door for 1 second, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds. And then you're ready to actually start proper training. So it's just a step by step. Easy step by step.
Look at that, we came right back around to it. I love it. I tell you, I will hand it to you. Separation anxiety cases were always very difficult for me. And like I said, in my 30 years, I haven't done very many of them. And I don't know if I've ever seen one as severe as you probably see on a regular basis. Where can people find you? Because they need, and I love that we have people that are starting to specialize in things. You know, we're not just all expected to know everything.
Yeah.
I don't have that brain capacity.
No. And it's like aggression cases. Like, I have no interest in working with aggression cases. It's just not my bag, you know. Like, I just...
Yeah, I get it.
I
don't want to do separation anxiety cases.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So where can they find you? Because they need to come and see you.
Yeah, so I do work remotely with my clients. So I've got clients all over the world, America, Europe, England, Australia, et cetera. Awesome. So, and if you lived across the road from me, I would still work with you remotely, because why add the complication of an extra person leaving? So I'm really easy to find. I'm on nessjones.com. nessjones.com. And you can get on there, you can download a free PDF, which is all about recognizing sort of subtle signs of body language, you know, where your dog might be feeling anxious, but also the context again. Like, so, you know, if your dog's panting, what is the context? Is that a sign of stress, or is it possibly something else? Is it hot? Is it been playing and it's been running around and it's just panting because it's hot? So I think the context is really important, because with the COVID lockdowns and things, separation anxiety became like a bit of a buzzword or phrase.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, and I'm like, I don't believe that all these dogs have got separation anxiety. I think a lot of people thought maybe they did. And so the purpose of the PDF is to kind of drill down and say, well, does it or doesn't it? So, and I've got a book coming out. The book waiting list, which is should be on my website as well. So yeah,
excellent. And we'll put all this in the show notes. Do you know when that book is coming out? Do we have a date yet?
No date. Oh, I'm hoping October, November. So yeah,
that is fantastic. Oh, can't wait. I am so grateful that you got up this morning and got on with me. I appreciate it. I have been looking forward to this all day.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I just don't do a lot in separation anxiety, but love the things that you do. Guys, if you have any issues or you even think, get on her website and see. And then if you do have problems, hey, she's your gal.
Oh, thank you.
She's your gal. And send her some cornbread, because she doesn't even know what cornbread is.
I don't know what cornbread is.
That's all right. Some people might be on here listening. They might be on the other coast and be like, we don't know what cornbread is either. We're just country over here in Tennessee. Yes, thank you so much. I really do appreciate it.
No, thank you. I appreciate you as well and everything you do. So,
well, thank you. And will you come back?
Oh, totally.
Can you come back in another time and we can kind of delve into this a little bit more?
Yeah, honestly, we could talk for another 2 hours and still not cover it. So, yeah.
It's just so much to it. So I really, really appreciate it. And guys, I'm telling you, if you got issues with separation anxiety, I don't even think about it. See Ness. Ness, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Guys, I hope you guys have a great rest of your week.